Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the program host, guests, and participants, and not necessarily those of KKRN Community Radio and Acorn Community Enterprises, or the underwriters of this station. Hello and welcome to Dig This, Music with a Message. I'm your host, Craig Boyer, joined with guests in studio, Sarah Hoxie, Alex Colvin, Larry Harris, and Jim Dowling. Hello, all.
Hey.
Hello. Hello.
Nice to be here.
Thank you. I'm really glad to have you here. Our engineer is in the other studio. Our goal is to entertain and to enlighten you with music that is more than love tunes. This show will feature 7 to 8 songs with some discussion in between. Today's show promises to be less serious than usual, with a Halloween bent to it. The first musical selection was obviously The Twilight Zone, and it's by the Cosmic Orchestra. Today's theme is called Songs and Stories of the Great Unknown. Our next selection is The Monster Mash by the Crypt Kicker 5. Then I'm going to share Christenstein with you all by an anonymous author. And then God in a Drawer by Berkeley and Hart, followed by a discussion of this song and Christenstein.
I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight, for my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It got on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash. From my laboratory in the castle east, to the master bedroom where the vampires. The ghouls all came from their humble abode to get a jolt from my electrode.
They did the mash.
They did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They did the mash.
It got on in a flash.
They did the mash.
They did the monster mash. The zombies were having fun.
In a soup bar.
The party had just begun.
In a soup bar.
The guest included Dracula and his son. The scene was rocking, all were digging the sounds. Igor on chains, backed by lawyers baying hound. The coffin bangers were about to arrive with their vocal group, the Crypt Kicker Five.
They played the mash.
They played the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They played the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
They played the mash.
They played the monster mash. Out from his coffin, Rex's voice did ring. Seemed he was troubled by just one thing. Opened the lid and shook his fist and said, whatever happened to my Transylvania twist?
It's now the mash.
It's now the monster mash.
The monster mash.
And it's a graveyard smash.
It's now the mash.
It's caught on and flashed.
It's now the mash.
It's now the monster mash. Now everything's cool, Rex a part of the band, and my monster mash is the hit of the land. For you the living, this mash was meant to. When you get to my door, tell them what is said.
Then you can mash.
Then you can monster mash.
The monster mash.
And you my graveyard smash.
Then you can mash.
You'll catch on in a flash.
Then you can mash.
Then you can monster mash.
Mash. Monster mash,
boy. Mash, boy.
Monster mash, boy. Monster mash,
boy. Now a monster of a different kind. It was a dark and stormy night. Thunder crashed, lightning flashed, and high above Redding, California, castle could be seen. It was the much-feared Castle Vangelico. Inside the castle dungeon, a bony hand adjusted flasks, bottles, and test tubes as foul liquids boiled. The bony hand was that of the infamous Dr. Emil Vangelico himself. He wore a white lab coat, now stained with the evidence of his many feared experiments. His eyes gleamed as he looked at a sheet-covered table in the middle of the room. Under the sheet lay a human form. Or was it human? The crazed doctor rubbed his hands together as he called out, "Igor, come quickly! There is work to be done!" And in a moment, a hunched ragbag of an assistant entered dragging a large metal box. "Yes, master. Here are the materials you ordered." "Good, Igor. It is time to complete our experiment." I love experiments, masters, even though the villagers say you are crazy." "Crazy? I'll show them. I'll show those idiots who's crazy. Soon all the world will know the name of Dr. Emil Vangelico."
"Of course they will, master, but you might have made a better impression if you had not borrowed the mayor's cerebellum before he was quite finished with it."
"Silence, Igor. That was a trivial matter. But tonight I am going to do what no man has done before. I am going to create a perfect spiritual life, and I will call him Christian Stein."
"Christian Stein, master. Oh, you...
"Yes, Igor, he will have everything, everything a perfect Christian should have."
"Oh, I love operations, master."
He said this as the wild-eyed doctor pulled the sheet from the body. There lay a form of a handsome man in an expensive silk suit. "Ah, the moment has come, Igor. First, bring me the voice of a great speaker from that box. Next, the patience of Job. Now, the courage of Stephen from that box." After some time and effort had gone by, Dr. Vangelico ordered the serums he'd made. "Now the hypodermic needle, Igor!" The sweating doctor injected double doses of daily prayer and meditation into his creation. The ability to resist carnal temptation into his creation. And last but not least, a triple dose of rules and regulations. Thunder boomed as the doctor asked, "Igor, have we forgotten anything?"
"Oh, no, master. I have turned the box upside down, and there's nothing left inside."
"Excellent, Igor." The doctor fastened power cables to his creation's neck. He then pulled a lever, and electricity shot through his creation, creating light like a thousand suns. After a few moments, Igor shouted, "Master, your creation is moving!" "Yes, Igor, my creation is alive, and he will be called Perfect Christenstein!"
"Yes, Master, he looks very good."
They watched as the thing called Christenstein pulled himself to his full height. The large, handsome figure looked down at the doctor as he said in a low, hostile voice, "If I speak with the tongues of men and of angels and have not love..."
"Love? Igor, what is he talking about, Igor?"
"I don't know, Master."
Christenstein continued, "If I give all I possess to the poor and have not love, I have nothing!" The creature reached for the doctor's throat as the doctor choked out,
"Igor, you did forget something. We forgot something."
Igor whimpered, "Yes, Master, we forgot that without love, a perfect Christian is a perfect monster!"
Well, Joe's a CEO, and God is his crutch. He leans on it heavy when he drinks too much. Sometimes he hits his wife, and sometimes he hits his kids. But he donates every Sunday, and he's forgiven for what he did. And he keeps God in a drawer, just in case he needs it. Unlocked and ready, on hold in the dark. And every now and then, he takes it out and reads it. He likes to keep God handy for when times get hard. Well, Mike's a politician, and God is his bank. He knows who to ask, and he knows who to thank. He knows people wear religion like a rope around their necks. So he gives a nod to Jesus, and the people write him checks. He keeps God in a drawer, just in case he needs it. Unlocked and ready, on hold in the dark. And every now and then, he takes it out and bleeds it. He likes to keep God handy for when times get hard. And he don't care about religion, he don't care about the truth. It's all about the people he controls. And there ain't no greater power than the power of God in the hands of men who have no soul. Jerry, he's a preacher, and God is his gun. He uses hell and heaven, it's just the way he gets things done. He says to love thy brother, unless thy brother disagrees. Then he prays for a weapon to bring thy brother to his knees. And he keeps God in a drawer, just in case he needs it. Cocked and ready, on hold in the dark. And every now and then, he takes it out and cleans it. He likes to keep God handy for when times get hard. He likes to keep God handy for when times get hard.
Okay, we're back, and we're going to share our thoughts on what we've just heard. And so I don't know who wants to go first, but speak up, whoever wants to.
Well, part of today is talking about the supernatural or magic, and we're getting close to Halloween. And one of the outcomes of having supernatural and magic are people that understand that it's very powerful, and they control other people. It seems like both of what we last two things we listened to was about people understanding that there's supernatural there, don't have to believe in it. It's a good tool to use against people.
Yep. What is your thought, Alex, on this?
Well, it was quite a diverse selection, and you did an excellent job of reading that story. One other element that I just think was interesting that was brought in the first two was the effect of science. Last night was watching a video about the Book of Enoch, which some people attest is possibly the oldest written piece of human literature. And it actually deals with spiritual world, it deals with monsters. So when you started playing the Monster Mash, I thought, oh yeah, there's monsters, you know, the Nephilim and different things in the Bible. But in our current age, it's interesting because you have this recurring theme also in history and spirituality of people trying to create human life. And science right now is delving into that area, if not creating, you know, mixing genomes to do different kinds of things. And, you know, you have stories about biological research areas that may have unleashed new life forms, current day monsters and things like that. So that kind of issue of human arrogance, I think, is, and humans trying to be God. The third piece that you had, it's like humans using God. I'm a person of faith, and so I believe in God, but I believe there's always that really subtle question of, am I trying to build my kingdom, or am I trying to assist in helping to realize God's kingdom?
Okay, thank you, Alex. And Alex is a local person. He and his wife, Linda, they live in Burney, so they're not too far from this studio up here in Round Mountain, so we're pleased. I don't think he's ever been in the studio. Is that right?
That's right. And thank you very much for allowing me to be here.
We're glad to have you here, and we'll have to have you come back when you can do some picking and grinning.
I would like to do that. If I had known, yes. You know, like one of these days I'll sing you I had a dream last night about a UFO.
All right.
It deals with aspects of the unknown.
That would have been perfect for today. Absolutely perfect. Sarah, you've heard the Christian Stein, and you've heard the Monster Mash. Juxtaposed, and then you've heard the God in a drawer. What do you have to say about what you've just heard?
Well, the first thing I want to say is about Monster Mash, because I have never listened to it that closely. Every time I hear it, it's in the middle of a Halloween party. And actually, it's a really good song, but you can't tell that with screaming kids and candy flying everywhere. So that was kind of cool. And with these headphones on, you know, it's really, really clear.
You could concentrate.
Yeah, it's neat. You know, in terms of the, you know, the two more philosophical pieces, which I really see those two, the Christian Stein and God in a Drawer, to me, they just really, really just speak to the way that, and I wouldn't just lay it on Christianity, because I think that any major religion, you know, people will take advantage of that, take power out of that, and try and control other people. And it's just one of the things that can really derail religion and derail people's participations. Like, you know, churches and you know, faith communities do a lot of good stuff in this world, but their memberships drop, and there's a lot of bad things that happen around it, and there's for good reason. So they were both, I think, you know, enlightening and interesting and metaphorical for sure.
And what I took about Christian Stein is, without in any religion, as you say, is that if there is not love there, then it becomes monstrous. And we see that in all kinds of religions. When there is no love and caring for other people, it becomes a monster.
Yeah, or if the love is not unconditional, because so many times it comes with conditions.
And I think also that what I've noticed is there are people that are very clear about love within their group. And soon as anybody is of a different group, it doesn't apply. Mm-hmm. And that's the danger I see. But they look very good within the group that they are aligned with.
I was just thinking about that yesterday, and I'm glad you brought that up, because, if you're in a certain religious group or whatever group it might be, you're fine, you're supported, and you're okay. And I think that's true. Like when the Nazis were in power, they were good to their families, they were good to people within their sphere, but the Jews and the Gypsies and so on, that was another thing. So they didn't have that capacity, or they didn't seem to be able to have an understanding of love for all humanity. And that's, I think, what you're saying. And
yeah,
that's what I'm seeing.
I'm glad you brought it out, because in this world today, especially, both points that you made about the centrality of love and about the, loving people outside of your own group, because I see major problems right now is we need racial and religious harmony. That means to practice, to take to heart, like what Jesus said about love, even loving your enemies.
Mm-hmm. And do good to those that hate you and despitefully use you. And you don't see much of that.
And we need peace. We need world peace. Look at Korea. We need the peaceful reconciliation of North and South Korea. Mm-hmm. And our young people are growing up, and we don't want our young people to grow up in an environment of hate, or where they feel one group is superior to another and therefore don't love them. We want to create an environment of true love for our children to grow up in.
Well, it's interesting the way that society has segmented itself so much, and it happens more and more. Now that social media has so much to do with your point of view and directing things to your point of view and messages, and so it just divides things even more, and it's kind of a dismal prospect. And
we're kind of in dismal swamp right now.
Dismal swamp.
But we can start the revolution right here.
Let's start it.
I'm
with you, Alex.
Caring for everyone, not just those in the chosen group. I agree. Okay, well, I want to let you know that you're listening to Dig This, Music with a Message on KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio. Sponsored by the community, these programs wouldn't exist without your generous support of community radio. Our next song is going to be Welcome to My Nightmare by Alice Cooper. And then I'm going to share my nightmare, and we'll have a 3 to 5 minute discussion following that.
Yeah. You're welcome to my nightmare, yeah.
Okay, I wanted to share with you, and I have shared with at least two people here in studio, my nightmare. It happened about 2 weeks ago. I had a nightmare with a black limousine following my wife and myself, and we gave it the slip, we thought, and we were walking a kind of a rural spot up a hill afterwards, and as we did that, we noticed that there was a little skunk following us. And I said to my wife, well, we better move along here, get away from this little skunk, because he could still squirt us, you know. So we moved a little faster, but the skunk followed us. And the skunk got bigger and bigger and bigger and became a very large skunk. I said, wow, I don't know what we're going to do. And then we looked, and that skunk had turned into a leering Donald Trump. We were frightened. But I found an oil barrel. It appeared all of a sudden in my dream, and a 55-gallon oil drum. And I turned it on its side, heavy sucker, and I shoved it at Donald Trump. And he jumped out of the way, and then I began yelling. And my wife woke me up, Craig, what's wrong? And I told her my dream. So that concludes my nightmare. And I never had a politician in my nightmares before. And we've had some bad politicians. But this situation has reached a point where he's a part of my nightmares now. And I wanted to go around the room here and just talk about what we have going on here in the United States of America. So I've got your mics up, and whoever wants to speak first, have at it.
I thought it was interesting that you told the story about your nightmare, because when we were listening to the Alice Cooper song, I'm thinking this has so many overtones towards the political situation that we're in right now. And then, you know, your nightmare certainly corroborated that.
It wasn't hard to interpret that nightmare
no,
at all.
It's pretty clear.
That stinky little skunk becomes a really big skunk, and he won't leave. And you can't even get him with an oil barrel. And I thought it was interesting, in my dream it was an oil barrel.
Right, right. No, I know the metaphors are amazing. You know, I dream in metaphor,
I think.
You do. But yeah, I think welcome to my nightmare, my breakdown. I mean, you know, the country in so many ways is in a breakdown, and it's also in a nightmare. I mean, it is a nightmare, because I think one of the nightmarish things about it is that there are so much disruption. You know, it's like you don't even know where to start. Like, what cause do you pick up? You know, I mean, there's so many to choose from. And you know, there's that overhanging possible nuclear threat with North Korea, not to mention just, you know.
I do worry about that. And I think that might have been the precipitator of my nightmare, realizing that Donald J. Trump was poking the eye of the rocket man, as he calls him. And who's going to give in a case like that? They're both megalomaniacs, narcissistic, and all of that. Where does that end? Where does that end? And that's why Bob Corker, Senator Bob Corker, said, you know, I'm worried about World War III. And he's a Republican who did support Donald Trump before. So when somebody like that says what he said, no wonder I had a nightmare. Alex?
Well, when I was listening to the first song, it just brought me into the realm of the topic of the unconscious, because talking about dreams. So relevant to the difficulties in political discourse, one thing that comes into my mind is Carl Jung said, 95% of what people think is reality is projection of their own unconscious, you know, anxieties, fears, whatever. In a sense, you know, if your life is not pleasant, we're all living in a nightmare. When you have people of the stature of major political figures, major national leaders, then, you know, you said Donald Trump is living in your nightmare. But if you turn it around, I mean, it's reciprocal. You and the United States, to a large degree right now, are living in Donald Trump's nightmare. Talking about the great unknown, because of the way media works right now, so much on reality doesn't matter. It's image that matters. And especially one of my critiques of Donald Trump is that it's a critique, but it also in a certain way is a acknowledgement of an accomplishment on our part. He's the greatest public relations president we have ever had. And he studied public relations, and he uses it. So we don't always know what the reality is. And because of conflicting narratives in the media, it's very, very difficult, you know, to know what the reality is. So I think it's incumbent upon us, because by the way that we live and by the things that we think and the things that we do, we create, you know, we create our reality. We also influence other people. You're a character in my dream, but I'm also a character in your dream. And so when we manifest, you know, our reality through the decisions that we make. You know, I just want to be a person who tries to manifest a good reality so that, you know, if Donald Trump is living in a nightmare, or if I'm a part of his nightmare, I want to be able to help bring things into consciousness that change that reality.
Good goals, good goals. Larry, what do you think?
They've said a lot, but I'm just thinking about the song and the music. And Alice Cooper, I don't listen to a lot of Alice Cooper, but he had something in that song that I'm not a musician, but I think there's something called like a tritone or a diminished fifth there, where it's just a little off. It's like in the Simpsons opening song where they go, "The Simpsons." Mm-hmm. It's just not right, and
yes.
It's unsettling. And there was unsettling sounds in that song. And I think that's what musicians are doing. They're going to either try to mimic what we feel or control what we feel. And I just noticed that in the song, that it was, mm-hmm. It's if you aren't scared, get scared.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a feeling.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Jim Dowling.
Sure. yeah, if we're talking about current politics, I think we're also, we're talking about leadership that embodies a great unknown. We are not doing things the way we have in the past. And, I just saw Terry Tempest Williams a couple nights ago at Shasta College, and she was talking about the threat to our national parks. That was a big theme for her. And we just don't know how the world is going to change, but we knew coming in that there was real intentions of changing things, of turning things upside down. And, it's a big question. It's what is next? It seems like every week a big surprise is dished out to the American public, and it is unknown. Where are we headed? So,
And you know, the scary thing is, to me, is that I don't think Donald Trump has an idea. I think he just makes it up as he goes along. He's not really a thinker.
He's a winner.
He's a winner.
and his mind is the great unknown.
Yes, I think so. It's kind of.
Well, I also think his tax returns are also the great unknown.
That's for sure. That's for sure. Okay. Alex said that we should do this song. It's the Sons of the Pioneers, Ghost Riders in the Sky. And we're going to plan to follow that up with a bit of discussion. Alex has some things to say about that one.
An old cowpoke went riding out one dark and windy day. Upon a ridge he rested as he went along his way. When all at once a mighty herd of red-eyed cows he saw, a plowing through the ragged sky. And up the cloudy draw. Hi-hey, yippee-i-ho. Ghost herd in the sky. Their brands were still on fire and their hooves were made of steel. Their horns were black and shiny and their hot breath he could feel. A bolt of fear went through him as they thundered through the sky, for he saw the riders coming high, and he heard their mournful cry. Hi-hey, yippee-i-yo, ghost riders in the sky. As the riders loped on by him, he heard one call his name. If you want to save your soul from hell, a-riding on our way, then cowboy, change your ways today, or with us you will ride, a-trying to catch the devil's herd across these endless skies. Aye.
Yippee-i-yo! Okay, Alex, you have something to say about this particular selection.
Well, I just think that, you know, when you talk about the great unknown, you can't leave death out. Mm-hmm. And you can't leave the question of whether or not there is a spiritual world out, however you define it. If you define it, you know, as other dimensions, but, you know, beyond our five senses, beyond the realm of time and space, what is there and how does it influence us and what is it? People have many different ideas. I'm not saying that nobody knows, but generally it is the great unknown.
Mm-hmm.
And then this question also brings in the thing of, if there is something beyond, then what is our purpose in life? Because
mm-hmm.
here are these, you know, this story was told to a child. The man who wrote this song heard it when he was a child from an old cowboy who told him that he had this vision, or recounted this vision to him. So he took it as a reality as a child listening to it. And I think it may have been a reality, that the guy may have mm-hmm. been out riding mm-hmm. on a ridge and he had this vision,
mm-hmm.
right? And he was told, change your ways, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the implication of the song is, we're living here in a realm where we're only conscious of so much.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know the great unknown.
There's so much we just don't know.
Right. And so how do we make the decisions, the right decisions, you know, if there are consequences to our life here that will affect.
Echo.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, very good. I'm glad you wanted us to have that song out there. Now, Larry, you have a poem, I believe. Yeah. Kind of related.
As a matter of fact, the reason I even thought about it is because this song, the lyrics were written by that gentleman, but the music was taken from an Irish song.
I didn't know that.
That's what I've heard. I went to Ireland. A friend of ours, some of ours, Dick Sorensen, mm-hmm. told me, if you go to Ireland, go to County Clare, because the music is wonderful there.
Mm.
And I went, and he was right. All the pubs and people just sit down and play with each other. It's amazing. Ireland is magical.
I know. I love the sound of the Irish when they speak, and their music as well. It's a fine thing.
It's their voice, but it's also the light. It's the way the water moves everywhere, and the rainbows.
It's so green.
And the aurora borealis, if you go farther north. So the music is magical, and that's what they understood in music, ghostwriters. They took the music and adjusted it for that song. There's a place in the County Clare near the town of Doolin where we're staying, and we took a little trip inland just a bit, and we found a place called the Well of St. Bridget. And it's just a place off the road. It was a little tiny sign, and we went there, and there was a spring coming up going through a little cave, and there were a bunch of ribbons tied to trees outside the cave, and we went inside, and there were pictures of kids and the family dog and my mother and newspaper clippings and lit candles and a Madonna who was choking with so many rosaries around her neck. It was just amazing. People seriously believe something spiritual important's going here. So they would come. We even met people who took a trip from the island of Inishere, which was right across the water, and a very dark night, came across and brought a picture of one of their people to say, save the life of my child here. I wrote a poem on my experience there, so I hope that it translates. I don't have a great Irish brogue, but we'll fake it. So this is that actual experience of going in there, and in the end of it, they will brave this water and at night because they believe there's something not unknown, known to save them. I call it a pilgrim in St. Bridget's Well. We set out this night toward the Well of St. Bridget, sailing the island of Inishere. Then by foot on through Doolin to follow that trail that skirts the sheer drop off of the cliffs of Moher, where we scrabble the burren over rock walls and pastures to a foothill of magic in the County of Clare, where a spring of cold water runs through a cold cave, and the water is wishes from the wells of our hearts that the ones that we love might be plucked from their sadness or freed from despair so the healing might start. First, we tie colored ribbons to the tips of the branches of the tree that stands guard over Bridget's cave. For it's said that a wind that unties a ribbon is a wind that can cure or straighten or save. We fest in the cave walls with their pictures and trinkets,
Oh, it's the ghost of the living haunts the halls of this cave. Wrinkled photos of babies pinned up long ago are wishes for magic, for mercy, for hope. As our newspaper clippings of weddings and trophies, a snapshot of twin boys standing proud by their goat, and prayer scribbled letters and toy dolls and lockets, a Madonna with her neck choked by rosaries like a rope. Oh, St. Brigid floats magic through these walls on its water, and despite all this mist here, these candles burn bright. Sure, to some it seems madness to brave our dark coastline, to leave our warm fires and traverse our own fright. But it's this thread of me own life, stitched right through me loved ones, that tugs me and turns me into a pilgrim this night.
Oh, all right. Thank Larry. You, Larry. He, wow. He's my favorite poet.
Uh-huh.
No doubt about that. Well, let's see now. We're going on to Sarah Hoxie, and she's going to bring us the topic of Bigfoot with a song that you call, what did you say?
Oh, this is called Footprints.
It's called Footprints, ladies and gentlemen, not Bigfoot, but...
Well, you can call it Bigfoot if you want. It's quite obvious what the song's about.
Okay.
But I, you know, and I think it ties into Larry's poem that he just read, is that there are always these, in so many places, there are these regional... these regional stories, you know, and belief systems that the people that live in those areas have. I just love Bigfoot. Bigfoot is like my, I want Bigfoot so much to really be a thing. And as far as I'm concerned, he is, because like Alex said, we really do create our own reality. So anyway.
So Bigfoot exists for Sarah.
Absolutely. Yes. If you're gonna have a... have a mascot.
Willow Creek believes in Bigfoot.
Oh, yeah. By the way, before I sing this, I've got to stop for a second. I did a lot of research on this song. So all of the vignettes in this song are from things people have told me.
Who left the footprints down by the water? Ask the old men, they will tell you. By the water, ask the old men, they would tell you. Well, early in the morning before the sun silvers up the leaves of the pines, they sit in a circle way out in the meadow and leave only watermelon rind. They sit in a circle way out in the meadow and leave only watermelon rind. By the water, ask the old men, they will tell you. Who left the footprints down by the water? Ask the old men, they will tell you. Well, there's a girl who hikes in the mountains. She came face to face one day with a giant man. They stared at each other and then they both ran away. And who left the by the water, ask the old men, they will tell you. Who left the footprints down by the water, ask the old men, they will tell you. Loggers will tell you of the drumming, miners will tell you of the screams, natives will tell you about their forest brothers who come to them in dreams. And who left the footprints down by the water? Ask the old men, they will tell you. Who left the footprints down by the water? Ask the old men, they will tell you. Down in the Wichita Canyon, in the middle of the night, young Benjamin Sawyer sandbar there in the pale moonlight. Footprints down by the water, ask the old men, they will tell you. Left the footprints down by the water, ask the old men, they will tell you. Mm-hmm. night in November, up on Highway 96. Silhouetted in the headlight beams, then he ran off into the sticks. Left the footprints down by the water, ask the old men, they will tell you. Left the footprints down by the water, ask the old men, they will tell you. Early in the morning before the sun silvers up the leaves of the pines, they sit in a circle way out in the meadow and leave only watermelon rind. They sit in a circle way out in the meadow and leave only watermelon rind. They sit in a circle way out in the meadow and leave only watermelon.
Give Sarah a hand.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, we don't have time for another song, but I wanted to share with you Edgar Allan Poe's The Raven, a very shortened version of it. And I learned that he, though, was born in Boston, but he, as a baby, was moved to Virginia and graduated from the University of Virginia and so on. And he had he developed a soft Southern accent. At that time, that was common there in Virginia. So I'm sharing it that way. Once upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered, weak and weary, over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore, while I nodded, nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping, as of someone gently rapping, tapping at my chamber door. Only this and nothing more. Ah, distinctly I remember, it was a dark and bleak December, and each separate dying ember wrought its ghost upon the floor. Eerily I wished the morrow, vainly I sought to borrow from my book's surcease of sorrow, sorrow for my lost Lenore, nameless here forevermore. And the silken, sad, uncertain rustling of its purple curtain thrilled me, filled me with fantastic terror, never felt before. So that now, to still the beating of my heart, I stood repeating, 'Tis some visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door. That is it, is nothing more. Deep into that darkness peering, long I stood there wondering, fearing, doubting dreams no mortal ever dreamed before. But the silence was unbroken, and the darkness gave no token, and the only word there spoken was a whispered, Lenore. Merely this and nothing more. Open then I flung the shutter, with many a flirt and flutter, in there stepped a stately raven of saintly days of yore. Not the least obeisance made he, not an instant stopped or stayed he, but with mien of lord or lady he perched above my chamber door, perched upon a bust of Pallas just above my chamber door, perched and sat and nothing more. Then this ebony bird beguiling my sad fancy into smiling by the grave stern decorum of the countenance it wore. Though thy crest be shorn and shaven, thou, I said, art surely no craven, ghastly, grim, and ancient raven, wandering from the nightly shore. Tell me what thy lordly name is on the night's Plutonian shore. Quoth the raven, Nevermore. Prophet, thing of evil, prophet still, a bird, a devil, by the heaven that bends above us, by the God I do adore, tell this soul with sorrow laden, if that within a distant Eden I shall clasp a saintly maiden, whom the angels name Lenore. Clasp that fair and radiant maiden whom the angels name Lenore. Quoth the raven, Nevermore. Be that our word of parting, bird of fiend, I shrieked upstarting, get thee back into the tempest of the night's Plutonian shore. Leave no black plume as a token of the lie thy soul has spoken. Leave my loneliness unbroken. Quit the bust above my door. Take the beak from out my heart. Take thy form from off my door. Quoth the raven, Nevermore. Thank you. Had to do that, Edgar Allan Poe. So now we have the last song here I'm going to try to fit in is by Iris DeMent. Oh, no, that's not it. We're going to go beyond that one.
Hey, Mr. Spaceman.
No, I want to go back to Iris DeMent here. There we go. As far as I know, let's see. Here we go. Let's find that out here. There we are.
Everybody is wondering what and where they all came from. Everybody is worrying about where they're gonna let the mystery be. Some say once gone, you're gone forever, and some say you're gonna come back. Some say you rest in the arms of the Savior if in sinful ways you lack. Some say that they're coming back in a garden, bunch of carrots and little sweet peas. I think I'll just let the mystery be. Everybody is wondering what and where they all came from. Everybody is worrying about where they're gonna go and the whole thing's done. But no one knows for certain, and so it's all the same to me. I think I'll just let the mystery be.
We have to let the mystery be, even though we're very curious and want to know more. You've been listening to KKRN 88.5 FM, and we want to thank you for listening and supporting the station with your donations, be they tax-deductible or not. We're able to bring you radio not available elsewhere, and we thank you for your ears and your donations. Again, thanks for listening and supporting KKRN Community Radio, and great big thanks to Shane, our fine engineer. Tune in next week for Dig This Environmental Watch with host Pamela Spoto. And we might have just a moment for a little bit of Acoustic Alchemy's Vapor Trails.